It had been days ago that Lee had decided what to do. The reason why all his excuses hadn't done anything for the guilt was because the choices you made when you were backed into a corner weren't worth a damn. It was the choices made under the cold and reasoned light of morning, the ones where you might pick from any number of courses, from easy to dangerous to downright stupid. Those were the choices that gave the true test of a man's mettle. So of course, he'd chosen stupid. What's up, you guys? Welcome back to another episode. Where we last left off, Haytham has been arrested, tried, and sentenced to death by hanging on the steps of the Great Sanctuary. I hope you're fully caught up, because that is a serious spoiler if you missed the last few episodes. If you need a refresher, I will have a link to the full playlist down in the episode description, as well as links to a couple of recap videos, just to give you a sense of where we are in the story. Alright, that's enough out of me. Let's get down to the good stuff. I'm Josh Call, and this is Last Colosseum. The sun was still half hidden behind the keep in the east, and already the square was as full as it ever was, the current of folk streaming in from all corners of the city only increasing by the hour. It had been the same at the trial. The magistrate had derisively called it a carnival, and was so boisterous that he'd eventually cleared the chamber. Even after, the carnival had only moved outside, where they continued to watch and sing and drink through the windows. The trial would seem like a funeral compared to today. Lee had arrived hours ago, slipping between the bonfires and the circles of revelers, and found his seat on the edge of the low stone wall that ringed the fountain. He hadn't come to watch the drop. He had desperate business to handle this morning. But he hadn't been able to sleep, last night or any night, in the over a turn since they'd arrested Red Ugly. And even from a quarter mile off, the music and the singing in the square had made his window rattle. Eventually, he'd given up on sleep and found himself drawn by some sick fascination toward the square. It was even more crowded than he thought, Lee realized as the dark had given way to an overcast morning, the air still smelling strongly of wood smoke. Not only was the square packed with the gathering hundreds, but the balconies above the shop fronts and even the nearby rooftops were laid out with blankets as the picnickers kicked their feet over the edge. It left a bitter taste in Lee's mouth to think that under different circumstances, he'd have been pissed drunk and singing with the best of them. He slipped his gauze-wrapped hand into his cloak and took another nip of cheap whiskey from his flask to settle his nerves. He flexed his fingers experimentally, hoping that his hands would be clever enough with his lockpicks to overcome the handicap. He couldn't say when he'd made the decision to go in after him. Certainly not at first. It disgusted him to think that when he'd heard that they'd arrested the Reaper, Lee's first response had been to toast the health of Lord Whiterose. The guilt only came later. He should have been there, watching the brawler's back. If Haytham hadn't been so bloody obstinate, or, the voice of his guilt interrupted him, if you hadn't given him over to kill him in the first place. I didn't have a choice, he caught himself saying under his breath. He'd been saying that a lot lately. The excuse rang hollow. The guilt wasn't satisfied, not now and not before. He'd thought about telling Paul. She was the only person he trusted to give him sound counsel. But she'd been through far too much recently, thanks in no small part to Lee, and she hadn't pressed him on any of the things that he and the Jackdaw had said on the night her old place burned. Lee didn't know whether in all the excitement of the night she'd forgotten what was said, or if she'd decided that it was better to let buried things stay buried. Either way, he didn't have the heart to drag her into the muck with him. His appeal to her god hadn't gone much better. They had received him in the sanctuary with that slight air of gracious pomposity that always seemed to hang about a black hand like a noxious cloud. He'd followed the priest into the coffin-like dark wood shriving booth at the end of one of the short halls that branched off of the nave. The Black Hand had sat in grave silence as the thief had laid out his crimes against king and governor, and there were many, only slightly softening the details around the edges. He'd walked out an hour later, clutching his blistered hand, his clothes smelling like barbecue and sour milk from the salve the Black Hand had given him. His slate with Cirrus was clean, the priest had assured him, whatever that meant. Lee felt no different. It hadn't done anything for the guilt, save that he forgot about it for a few moments at a time when the stinging, oozing pain in his hand drove out all thought. When he'd gone to Paul's after, still sweaty and holding his wrist, a greasy sheen on his brow, she'd embraced him and told him she was proud of him. 100 times that night while she'd fixed him supper and while he'd beaten her at stones and while they sipped tea by the hearth after he'd helped her put the boys to bed, he'd caught himself staring at the white lace glove she wore around her deformed hand, the sign of the faith. He picked at the corner of the dirty bandage wrapped around his palm, staring absently up at the bent arm of the gallows arcing over the heads of the stone-faced gray cloaks along the bottom step. His guilt hadn't eased a bit after shriving, even if Cirrus gave one solitary shit that he'd burned his hand to the point of uselessness, and Lee had strong doubts that he did. It had been days ago, after the sanctuary, but before he'd gone looking for the spider again, that Lee had decided what to do. The reason why all his excuses, all the I had no choices, hadn't done anything for the guilt was because the choices you made when you were backed into a corner weren't worth a damn. It was the choices made under the cold and reasoned light of morning. The ones where you might pick from any number of courses, from easy to dangerous to downright stupid, those were the choices that gave the true test of a man's mettle. So, of course, he'd chosen stupid. "I'm gonna save Haytham," that was what he told the spider. What he told Randall, anyway, taking care to stay 10 steps away from the sellsword with a clear path behind him in case he had to run. It had been easier to find the Kadari the second time, and Lee had pinched a tight-fitting leather cuirass that he could wear under his tunic, just in case Randall tried to make good on the threat he'd made the last time. It made his still-mending ribs ache, but a knife between them would ache more. The sellsword hadn't moved, but he'd placed a hand lightly on the pommel of his short sword.
"I said if I saw you again,
I'm gonna save Haytham," Lee repeated, his fear clutching his stomach in a vice grip. "But I need Kingmaker's help." Randall spat in the runnel on the alley floor.
"If you're trying to kill yourself, I save you the effort, Kafasa."
"You made it into the jail once."
"And look what happened."
He took his hand off his sword and tipped his head back so that his face caught the moonlight.
"We have a saying in Qadar," he murmured. "Kan khabim saha karakhal. The waves break against the mountain. Your reaper did not learn this. If you throw yourself against the mountain, it will break you too."
He turned and swept down the alley and out of sight. "What about loyalty?" Lee called after him, but he didn't stop. It would be harder without the gray man's help, all the more considering that White Rose surely expected them to try something, but Lee had made up his mind even before he went looking for him. He'd scoured the library for days looking for the layout of the jail. Surely whatever city official had long ago removed the plan had done so to avoid exactly what the thief was attempting. What he'd found instead was a map of the sewage tunnels, a partial map anyway, that showed the path rainwater took along the alleys and down into the catacombs that underlay the city. Even this map had blotted out the square on which the jail sat, but as he walked the perimeter of the wall each day, his head bowed and hood drawn, Lee became convinced that there had to be a drain, at least one, perhaps more, inside the yard of the jail. If there wasn't, the yard would almost certainly flood whenever it rained. From there, he only had to figure out where it was, and that meant going into the black. He let days slip by before he'd first attempted it. There'd been a time, it felt like another life, when he'd been more at home in the Undercity than above it. But that was before. Before Haytham, before Paul. And it filled him with a sort of atavistic dread when he thought about going back down. There were devils in the dark. But it was either that or give up. Without the spider, there was no other way. Not that Lee could see. Not before it would be too late. The first time he'd gone down, he made it 6 steps into the dark. his feet splashing through runny gobs of filth, his stomach roiling at the stench before fear and memories made him turn back. The second time, he made it 10 steps, slipped on the scummy floor, and nearly went face first into the shit before he caught himself on the slimy wall. It was after that that he started wearing the gloves and a pair of hobnail boots that he'd pinched from a leather worker's. The third time, he brought 200 feet of rope. He tied one end around the iron bars of the drain grate and the other end around his waist. It cut down on his fear of losing his way considerably, and he almost made it to where he guessed the jail was before the rope went taut. The next time, he brought 300. In the end, he'd found it, and for days he'd gone back and forth over the route between the jail and the alley, counting his steps. At first, he'd held on to the rope, which was by now sopping wet with all manner of filth. Then he'd felt his way along the wall, until finally he could cover the whole route in just over a minute at a light jog without slipping. He'd done all of this without any sort of light, of course. Even if he could trust that the noxious fumes rising off the sludge on the tunnel floor wouldn't catch and set the whole undercity ablaze as if lined with fire tar, that concern was a distant second next to Lee's fear of whatever creeping things that might still call the catacombs their home. They hadn't noticed him yet, and the thief was intent that it stay that way. It was almost time. By now, he wasn't alone on the fountain. There were several families laying out sandwiches and bottles of wine on the parapet he'd been using as a bench, and two of their boys were balancing on the wall, trying to knock each other into the water. Gingerly, Lee unwrapped the dirty bandage from around his palm and stuffed it into his pocket. He flexed his hand again. Much of it was still red and inflamed from the fire at Paul's place, but at the base of the palm it was blistered and oozing from the Black Hand's candle. Mercifully, his many trips through the black hadn't gotten it infected, not that he could tell anyway. His wound stung only slightly as he pulled on his black leather gloves. He took one last nip from the flask as he stood up. He jealously eyed the egg and cheese sandwiches that the family had brought. He knew he should have scarfed down something, but he wasn't hungry. His appetite always deserted him before a job. He took one last long look at the gallows before he left. There was still time to quit. If he went about this wrong, if he had miscalculated, or if White Rose anticipated his plan, or simply if that green bastard Luck deserted him too, this would all be for naught. It was too late for them to put up a second scaffold next to the Reapers, but not too late to reuse the same noose. He didn't think about it very long. He did have a choice. To stand next to Haytham, or to flee with Randall, the Spider, and everyone else. He gave the sanctuary his back and slipped the flask into his pocket. "What a day to die," he said under his breath as he waded through the crowd. From his high perch above the square, like some ancient bird of prey, Lord Whiterose surveyed the gathering crowd with hard-eyed satisfaction. They didn't know it, but they were here, every one of them, down to a man, for him. The balcony above the tea shop was wide and studded with several small tables and plush chairs for the guests. It would be a squeeze if everyone came. Elias had sent invitations to nearly a score of nobles and dignitaries, but that was all part of the fun. There were servants standing by, even now on the other side of the glass doors before the balcony, to make sure that they were well taken care of. He plucked another little cucumber sandwich off the silver tray one of the porters had brought and popped it into his mouth. A sigh rose from deep in his chest. In a matter of hours, it would all be over, and with it, release. Elias had been surprised to find that he slept no better after the brawler's arrest. Perhaps it was the dreams, or his creeping spice use, which was fast becoming a snare, or his responsibility to the governor. Perhaps it was that often when he walked into a room in the keep, the conversation therein stopped dead, as if the interlocutors had been talking about him only moments before. He'd tried to catch them in the act, so far without success. But more than once, when he was practicing swordplay, or pacing the bailey, or out riding with Rowan, he would sometimes catch a glimpse of a dark figure flickering at the edges of his vision. It made the hairs on his neck prickle, but when he turned to face it, or if it was late and he'd been drinking, barked a challenge to an empty room, the phantom vanished. He could tell that it scared the girl. She'd once caught him nude, brandishing a candlestick like a baton when he thought he heard a noise in the next room, but she hadn't said anything save to gently suggest that he see the Gov's doctor about something to help him sleep. The physician had mixed him a potent tincture of sweet milk and crushed herbs, urging him only to use it when he truly needed it. As it turned out, Elias needed it every night. It lent him a sleep that was deep and dreamless, though he still woke as often as not, bathed in sweat in the small hours before the morning. His days were hardly any better, whipsawed by the blunt rush of pleasure from the spice, followed by the bite of his rising paranoia. It would be better after the drop. He'd killed the brawler once, and slept like a baby after. What was the reply to the old traveler's farewell? May you die thrice over. Twice over, Elias corrected it under his breath. In the Reaper's case, twice would be plenty. He was sure of it. Still, and again, maybe this was the paranoia. Something pricked at the back of the lordling's consciousness, like he was forgetting something. His men overseeing the execution had told him that everything was ready, and but for a careless incident early on, which had cost one of the guards a couple of fingers, the warden assured him that the brawler hadn't given them any trouble since his arrival. Shiloh insisted, by letter and to his face, that the rivalry between himself and the spider had been quashed, and Kingmaker had enthusiastically accepted Elias's invitation to watch the drop. Still, Elias didn't trust the halfpenny spider half as far as he could throw him. His trust in the assurances of lesser men had nearly cost him his life, more than once. And so last night, after even the laudanum had failed to put him to sleep, Elias had steadied himself with a snift of spice and gone down to the jail to see the prisoner for himself, just to be sure that he wouldn't be hanging a mannequin come daybreak. The warden had been less than pleased about being woken up past midnight, and even less enthusiastic about taking him to see the prisoner, but White Rose had insisted. His boot heels clicked deliberately against the stone as he followed his escort up the steps. Torches spaced at even intervals flung his splintered shadow in every direction. It was quiet, as if the very walls held their breath.
"Was he up here?"
muttered White Rose as the jailer snapped back the three locks on the door to the upper corridor. Most of the cells, of which there were only four to a side, were empty, and through the open doors he could see that each had a small but well-made couch, a bed with a blanket and pillow, and a little writing desk and chair. It was here that they'd held Amitha during her brief stay. Elias had visited her once to make sure that she wasn't being treated like the howling savages they kept across the yard. He'd offered to have her move to an empty room in the keep to wait out Haytham's arrest. She'd declined, colorfully. The jailer shrugged.
"Well, that's old Longknives, the, master interrogator. It whips the other prisoners up into a frenzy when they can hear him working one over."
He shuddered.
"Best to keep them separate."
There were two more guards flanking the cell at the end. Elias had insisted on a detachment of cloaks to guard the brawler day and night. When the warden protested the waste of men, White Rose had gently reminded him of where it was that the Reaper had infiltrated before his arrest. The guard stiffened and saluted as he approached.
"Milord."
He waved off the salute. The guards parted as he paused in front of the cell door and reached for the iron plate. His hand was shaking. The plate squeaked only a little as it slid back. He peered into the black, wrinkling his nose at the stink that plumed between the bars.
"Lend me a light."
His escort pulled a torch off the wall and held it up in front of the opening. For a moment, he didn't see anything. Then a glint of torchlight on metal. And at last, as his eyes adjusted to the gloom, a vague man-shape, almost invisible but for the sheen of sweat on its brow and shoulders, began to stir. Elias's jaw tightened. His mouth was dry.
That's not him.
The gray cloaks exchanged a look.
It's him, assured one of them. Long knives. He's been worked over good. But that there's your reaper.
He bobbed his head toward the little window. Elias squinted into the darkness. The thing in the cell hardly resembled a man. Its arms were outstretched, chained to a ring bolted into either wall. There was no couch, no bed, no writing desk. Only the thing in the cell, sagging under its own weight.
Keys,
Elias heard himself say. The gray cloaks traded another look.
The warden says, who gives the warden his orders? We have to have him fit at the end of a stick.
Keys, snapped the nobleman. The guard hesitated for another half an instant before he dropped his gaze and fumbled for the right key among the dozen or so on the ring on his belt. As he stabbed it into the lock, Elias noticed that his other hand was bandaged, and the middle and ring fingers were missing past the foreknuckle. They pulled open the heavy door. Elias's heart thundered. Torchlight flooded the cell. His breath caught. Even in the light, the thing in the cell was barely recognizable. Its eyes were swollen shut, its face a mess of purple bruises above a snarl of red beard matted with dried blood. Its wrists and ankles were scabbed black from the irons, and more blood was crusted over a series of parallel slashes along its ribs and thighs. Whether it could see him standing silhouetted in the doorway, or it only felt the glare of the torches in the corridor, the thing in the cell snarled and flinched away from the light, chains rattling. Elias took a single step into the cell, his shadows spilling across the creature.
He sleeps like this.
The guard with the keys scoffed bitterly.
Well, we tried unchaining him for an hour a day.
Out of the corner of his eye, White Rose saw that he was running his thumb over the stumps of his fingers. He took another step into the cell, hardly noticing the stench of sweat and blood and piss radiating off the creature.
Hey them,
Elias whispered.
Hey them.
The thing didn't respond. Its head lolled toward the floor. It had lost weight, he noticed. At least a stone, the skin hanging off it in folds. Through the crusted filth, he could make out the edges of the wings curling around its ribs. It was Hatham, and it wasn't. It reminded Elias of the huge, stuffed snow bear in the corner of Femerial's study, frozen with its fangs bared, rearing up to its full 9-foot height. Elias had only seen a real snow bear once, from the window of his carriage on a diplomatic tour to the ice gates. The monster had been on the other side of the pike, swatting fish in the ice-choked shallows. It thrilled and frightened him in a way that no taxidermy could. It was the same with the thing in the cell. The flesh was there, but the fire was out. One of its shoulders was dislocated, he noticed. Seized by a sudden impulse, Elias grabbed it by the arm and screwed his thumb into the ruined joint. The thing roared and strained to pull away from him, runnels of sweat trickling into its beard. Its eyes opened. Iron-gray slivers were all he could see amid the swollen ruin of its face. But it wasn't the color that convinced him. It was the hate and rage and recognition blazing in those gray slivers as the thing in the cell glared up into the silhouetted face of Elias White Rose.
That's better,
Elias murmured. He ignored the stares of the gray cloaks prickling the back of his neck. For the first time, he'd caught the phantom flickering at the edges of his vision.
He was in control again. Do you know what day it is?
The thing didn't speak. Elias told him.
In 12 hours, you'll be dead.
No response.
How does it feel to be standing in the doorway,
about to find out the answers to all the questions that all the graybeards in the sanctuary and all the books in the library have puzzled at for 1,000 years? The thing glared hatefully up at him.
Or you won't.
He said with a laugh. He flicked his fingers. You'll just snuff out. He waited for an answer. None came. Elias was beginning to suspect that the torturer had taken his tongue. I envy you, in a way. The rest of us have to keep going, have to pick up the pieces you've scattered every which way. Their faces were dangerously close now. Do you think Amatha is better for having known you? Elias whispered. A vein in its temple throbbed. Do you even care? He straightened up. I wish it didn't have to be this way, he said, and a part of him meant it. The horizon just isn't wide enough. I don't know how, but for some reason God saw fit to give you a second chance. His gaze raked the thing from head to foot, and look what you've done with it. Suppose I should be flattered, he reflected, that I mean so much to you, that you'd throw it all away again for a chance at my throat. See, I wouldn't do that. It's hardly worth the effort to kill a mongrel, let alone risk my neck. He never got further. The moment he inched close enough, the thing in the cell snarled and lunged at him, the bloodshot crescents of his eyes wide and gleaming. His chained feet thrust down into the floor, his manacles wrenching at his dislocated shoulder as the chain snapped taut, the hard edge of his forehead passing only a finger breadth from Elias's chin. White Rose actually felt the hairs of the brawler's beard graze the tip of his nose as he lunged past. It all happened so fast, he didn't have time to react. His senses were dulled, and to the cloaks in the corridor, it must have looked like he'd perfectly measured the distance between them, hoping to bait the brawler into making just such a move. An inch closer, and he'd have shattered the lordling's jaw and broken all his teeth to flinders. Or worse, Elias's mind flashed to a few years back when he was on campaign, when a fleeing brigand had run his horse into a tree. The fragments of his broken nose had crunched up into his brain and killed the outlaw instantly. Elias grimaced as the Reaper showered him with sweat and spittle, snarling and snapping at him like a wild thing. There he is, he said, drawing his kerchief to wipe his face. I was beginning to think I'd lost you. Hatham. He saw recognition when he said the thing's name. He hit him just once, a swift jab right in the crease of his ruined shoulder. The brawler roared loud enough to wake the dead, at least loud enough to wake the barracks, and he sagged on his chains as if he'd fainted, his head slumped forward. Clean him up before tomorrow, Elias instructed the guards as he walked out. His gait was like that of a newborn foal. His legs had turned to jelly. I want those wings to gleam. A noise caught him as he stepped out of the cell and made him look back. It was words, or as near to words as the Reaper could manage. His voice was like shale sliding down a hillside.
I will kill you, he rasped, his breathing thick and labored.
You keep saying that, Elias replied before the door boomed shut. He almost believed him. Certainly he'd come as close as any after the last time he'd made that dying promise. He washed down these reflections with a swig of coffee and crunched another cucumber sandwich between his teeth. The sun was inching higher into the sky, and before it disappeared behind the cloud bank, the arm of the gallows threw its long shadow over the heads of the low folk. Sure, Hatham had come back once, but only because Elias had fled rather than make sure that he was dead. He wouldn't be making that mistake a second time. And if the brawler fancied that he'd crawl out of the void once more, after they'd spiked his head above the entrance to the Grey Keep and fed his body to the governor's hounds, Elias grinned. Let him bloody try. Thank you guys so much for listening. It really is a privilege to be able to share this whole story with you. A few weeks ago, I had a friend who had been following the story from the beginning say, when are we going to get another chapter with Lee? She is firmly Team Lee over Team Haytham. But what do you guys think? Let me know in the comments. You can also help this story by leaving a 5-star review on Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. All right, that is enough out of me. I'm excited for the next episode. I will catch you all next week.